You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And it's that time of the month where we have Hutchinson Legal in to go through your legal questions. And we've got the boss today, Grant. Welcome, Grant.
G'day. It's great to be here. Is my mic on? Because it doesn't sound like it's on.
Yeah, you're on. Oh, good. Absolutely.
Alan, it's good to be here, and I love your Christmas decorations. I just wish the listeners could see what you've got set up here. It's a Christmas tree that looks like it should have seen better years.
No, that's not nice. Now, Grant, when your people were up last month, we had the question about a baby that swapped at birth by accident at a hospital, and we're not here to pick on the hospital, but we want to know what the legal responsibilities and also the legal positions, A, for the person who thinks they've got the wrong baby, B, for the hospital, C, what are the rights if they turned around and said, look, we're going to DNA test each baby that was born that day, the parents of those babies, what are their legal rights? And just to throw in, just to make it a little bit harder, what if we had one baby that was born to, a very downtrodden family, and in fact, that child was born to a family that lived in, say, Malvern, Toorak, went to private school, had all those sorts of things. What are their rights and responsibility if they found out around 16 to 18 because they did a DNA test? Because a lot of people are doing DNA tests now for the fun of it. Mm-hmm. So it's a very complex question, but I'd like to find out. The listeners would like to find out where that would go.
Sure. No, look, and it's a good question. Look, the Family Law Act determines and makes orders for the carrying out of parentage or paternity testing, and there are procedures set out in Section 69, capital W, and that is if there's proof of parentage that the court can rule on these situations. It has to involve where a child's born during marriage or they've lived together over a period of time and a person's named as a parent during court action or where a person signed an acknowledgement. These things can be relevant factors to go in. But sometimes it's not a mixing up of a baby, but it's sometimes a guy saying, hey, look, that child's not mine. You know, but that's a different question. But can you have paternity testing done? So there is a procedure under the Act. But you cannot, obviously, if it's done by consent, then that's fine. But if it's not, the court can order that people undertake paternity testing, but they won't physically require it. They'll just put you in jail or some other penalties if you don't comply with the order, but they will not order that you be held down and somebody does a swab, you know.
Oh, won't they?
No, yep. There's a difference. An application will be made by a party to the proceedings in order to have testing procedures, but they cannot physically make them do the test. So they won't. Yeah, anyway, you know the difference. Yep. One is an order. The court's requiring you to do it, so there'll be consequences if you don't. Anyway, that's the procedure at the moment. So then there's other... You generally look at what's in the best interest of the child in making decisions.
Right.
And there's not a lot of... In terms of in Australia, there's no recent cases that I came up with. And sometimes these are done without going to court.
Yep.
But yes, the court will always, under Section 60, capital C, capital A, or capital CC, look at what's in the best interest of the child, and their interests are paramount. There's issues of child support dealt with under the relevant sections. I suppose in trying to apply this and what might happen in Australian court, it's worth looking to see what's happened in other jurisdictions.
Yep. So in just before we go on, sure. Greg, Grant. You're talking about the Grant, sorry.
That's okay. I'll call you Alan.
I was thinking of Greg in the office. All right, but can the court order, say, the hospital to DNA test every baby that was born that day to try, if they believe that, or say they do a DNA test on the baby, they say, yeah, this baby could not possibly be yours.
Wouldn't be all the babies born that day necessarily, because the mix-up can occur. So let's look at in India in 2017. Right. So could they? Well, again, it would go back to these orders, and again, you couldn't force people to undergo the test. Give court orders, but if they don't, they're not going to physically restrain them.
Right. So the court order would say I went to court. And it's not me, by the way, but suppose I went to court and said, right, I want a DNA test, but I want a DNA test your child, because I think your child's... Is a court likely to make that sort of order, or is that just out of the jurisdictions?
What would happen? Let me ask it this way. If you suddenly decided that you were married to royalty, you were really the son of some royal...
Yep.
Are they going to force the... Because you just want to link yourself to somebody to make... You know, everyone says I look like Prince whatever. Or are they going to force... Probably not. Right. You'd have to have something more. So in the cases where... Specifically where you asked about children being swapped in the hospital.
Yep.
So a few things that have come up. So let's run through the three examples that I've got and then see how that works. So in India, two babies were swapped. DNA tests revealed that they were not related to their relevant parent, as they understood it. The babies had bonded with the mothers and the families, and the families didn't want the children to leave. But they're clearly in the wrong family. This normally happens because you look at the child and say, this child doesn't look like anyone else in the family. Where does he get that long nose from, or where does he get the ears, or he's or whatever it is? So letters were sent, and the children and the families met, and it was confirmed visually. They just looked and said, clearly he's really meant to be with you, and vice versa. So DNA tests were done that confirmed it. The magistrate basically said, look, if you wanted to swap the babies, you could do it. But both families didn't because they'd raised them for the last 3 years. And so that was the end of it. It was interesting. But what would be fascinating would be what would happen in the event of a will.
Yeah, that's
so. The next case, in Japan, a man ended up in a home where he was in poverty situations. His father died when he was two, and he relied on state handouts. The other baby had been ended up in an affluent home. That's the case we're talking about.
Yeah,
he was he was well educated. He was running a business.
Yep.
Questions were raised when the affluent man had no resemblance again to any family members. So the family requested access to the hospital records, a bit like your question there, and DNA tests confirmed the mistake. So you can easily do it. You don't have to involve any other family. You can simply do a test on the child and the supposed parents.
Yeah, but you might want to find your own child.
Well, they did investigations. They found out the midwife had taken the babies to be bathed and returned the babies to the wrong mothers. Now, I thought they had a little...
they have a band on their arms, yeah.
Exactly. Sorry, I'm doing a physical thing on radio, see where they have
not
a band.
Working.
The district court in Tokyo ordered the hospital to pay the man who'd been affected by this, the man who'd missed out on being raised in an affluent family. He wanted 250 million yen, which is the equivalent of... 1.5 million pounds or so, that would be about $3 million. But instead they ordered that he be paid 38 million yen, which is 227, so about $500,000 in damages because of the mix-up. So it's not going to fix him for life if you know costs of living for a few years. If you read the daughter of Bob Hawke's affidavit, you'll see that it costs a fair bit to live, apparently. These children sought out to build a relationship with each other, and they seem to be happy families.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And I've got with me Grant Hutchinson, and we're talking about the case of where a baby has been accidentally swapped, And Grant, you've got some more to tell us about South Africa.
Sure. So there's the most recent decision seems to come out of South Africa, where there was a messy child support dispute, and the father, there was a test as a result of what the father required. There were DNA tests performed, and he wasn't the father of the child. So the judge ruled that the children in that case, where there had been a mix-up of the children, the judge ruled in Pretoria that the children should stay with the parents who raised them and not be returned to the biological parents. He said that he considered that, or the judge, it could be he or she, considered that the adoption, that effectively the parents had adopted the children that they had brought up. Or the children, actually maybe that's not the judge, but it was the a director of the University of Pretoria Centre for Child Law. But the deputy judge said this is not a matter where anyone can say they've won. It's a matter which must, at the end of the day, benefit the children. And remember, that's the overriding principle in Australian law. So the question is, how does that work? But you have a question about what would happen to the deceased estate of the parent.
Well, yeah, what I was wondering is that you've got the affluent parents that have got two of their own children, we'll say.
Yes.
And then they've got one that is disputed child. And they know now that it's not their child.
Sure.
The other side of the ledger, you've got a family that's not doing so well. And that child in that is actually, they are actually born to this affluent people. So if the person just says, well, I'm going to leave my will to my children, A is number three on the affluent society, which isn't their natural child. Is that considered as a child under law? And B, the one that is in the unaffluent one, who was actually born to the affluent one, do they have would they be considered as part of the will?
That's a good question. I'm glad you got to the end of it. So it depends. So if they're still alive, then the parents would obviously write a new will.
Yep.
And they would say, I'm providing for, Joe Bloggs, Mary Bloggs, and whoever else Bloggs,
yep,
and name the children that they consider them and their own, irrespective of what had happened years
right
ago. That would be the normal. And they may make some provision for the child who was not part of the...
Who was theirs.
Yeah, that was biologically theirs. Who knows? They have the right to do whatever they like. The will is a document that says that upon my death, this is what happens to my money. The more complex question is if they've died and then it's discovered. And I'm sure there's been many wills where the father wasn't the father of the children, and he said, such are my children. Normally, if you're during... during the time when you're still of childbearing capacity, as a family, you may not name the children. You simply say, for such of my children as survived me and attain the age of either 18, 21 or 25, then they share. Now, that would clearly be all biological children.
Well, that's what it's number three.
I think what you'd have there is, following the reasoning of the South African decision, they've really got four children. Because it would be seen as de facto adoption of the child. So I doubt that a court in equity wouldn't make provision for the
treat
child.
Treat them
as so. Yeah. The one that is by biological status, a child I don't think there'd be much question, but somebody could challenge and say that's not fair for whatever reason. And
because funny things happen with wills, don't they? I mean, not so much in wills, but as soon as there's money around, people come out of the woodwork, don't they?
Yes, and obviously that's one thing to look out for, but I think normally these things are done and dusted before people find out. So, but look, it's an interesting question, and if it comes up, lawyers would love to get involved. The people who will get the most out of the estate will be the lawyers.
In a case like that, I know we've talked about wills on and off. We don't want to go down that track today.
No,
but if that, we'll say the person that's in this family that's not affluent, we'll do that way because we don't want to put them down. if they wanted to contest the will of these other three, and it, particularly against the one that wasn't a biological yeah. child, who pays the court case? Does this one have to have the money to fund the case, or to fund their side of the case, or would it all be funded by the affluent society?
Right. So it wouldn't be the less affluent family, it would be just the child from the less affluent yep. family, a relevant child. And normally costs in the probate jurisdiction, it's known as the whispering jurisdiction, it's where everyone's polite and kind and we you're not shouting at each yeah. other.
Which doesn't always happen in court.
No. Normally the costs are borne by the estate. So yep. effectively that's why settlements often occur, because, but not always the case. So it's not always, the court will consider each case on its merits, but as a general rule, that's why often a settlement of some figure is made when there's a contest, if it has a reasonable prospect. I think we won't go through all of the different cases, but yep. It's an interesting area. So let's come back to it, particularly if a listener has another question on it.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 37 minutes past 12 o'clock and it's 18 degrees. And I've got Grant from Hutchinson Legal with me. Grant, you want to say a few things about New Zealand?
Well, obviously, to express the concern, our hearts go out to the families of all those affected. But one of the things that you turn to in terms of when there's an accident in New Zealand, you say, well, what's the situation for people yep. in terms of compensation or damages? New Zealand's a funny jurisdiction.
Is it?
It's like the, how sometimes you have those cousins that are a bit more risk-taking than others
yeah.
and they drive a bit faster and they do bungee jumps and go on these.
Yeah.
If you're wanting to do adventurous sport or risk-taking sport, where do you think of going? New Zealand.
No,
because
Zealand.
There's a lot of places in Australia that could set up bungee jumps, but there's just too much in the way of damages. So why would you... no insurance company is going to touch their business. Well, in New Zealand, there is a system, and it's... What I'd say is... it's not the place you want to go to and get injured unless you live there. If you live there, they'll pay the medical expenses.
So there's a... let's just backtrack. There's a difference between living there and a tourist.
If you're there as an overseas, if you're over visitors, basically from their own website, visitors who have an accident while in New Zealand are eligible for help with treatment and rehabilitation costs while in New Zealand.
Oh, right.
And so, so that's why you should really get medical insurance. You should get more insurance before you go overseas.
Anywhere. Yep.
Because you really want to be covered. It's not the same as Australia, so you can't just assume that everything's the same as Australia over there. But yeah, look, at this stage, no one's really thinking about that. But the question is, why did they go, knowing that there'd been an increased risk?
Yep.
Could there be action in Australia? You'd be looking at damages.
Well, because they're talking about in the paper that the tour boat shouldn't have been anywhere near as close, aren't they? I read that in the Sun this morning.
To a boat, as in the cruise ship.
The cruise ship that they were on, they reckon they shouldn't have been that close.
Okay, I haven't kept up with all the reading, but I don't think there was any risk. So there would be if
Well, they're talking about that they might charge them.
Oh, dear. So, yes, there was... Initially, it was an investigation, or a criminal investigation, I think they said, and then they clarified and said, no, it's more a coronial or just an investigation. So... But, yes, I suppose criminal law is one thing. The other thing, that doesn't bring anyone back.
Right. Nope.
It doesn't fix the problem, but it does certainly mean that people in future will consider these things. But it is a place where people go and engage in quite risky ventures, and the only reason they're being operated is because they've got a certain scheme that seems to work. There must be other things that take place, but obviously you want proper insurance, and it doesn't bring the person back, but it just means that there's something that's in place there.
Well, apart, and I don't want it ghoulish here, but apart from the fact that if there is an accident in New Zealand, or wherever it might be in the world, you want to bring the body back for a start off. And not everybody can dish out 10, 15, 20,000 in a hurry to do that.
Sure. So you're right. I think we dealt with, didn't we deal with this where somebody wanted to take ashes to England? No, let's not deal with that.
That wasn't me.
I think you apparently need a passport.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And we should mention, although we're fast running out of time, if you've got any questions, you should give Greg a ring on 59-615-991. Now, it is Greg. He's in the office, 59-615-991. We'll get Grant to answer them either today or when he's in next time. Grant, you want to talk about police searches?
Well, yeah, look, it's one of those things that people might come up against. So this can happen whether you're driving a car at home, or just imagine you're walking down the street and a police officer asks to speak to you. He wants to search your backpack. How would you feel about that, Alan?
Wouldn't worry me, because I wouldn't have any of it was wrong.
Well, that's great. So if you're happy and if they ask to search your backpack, you can easily say yes, and that's the end of the situation, unless they find something in there, Alan, that you didn't put there, obviously. So otherwise, police don't have a right to search unless you're in. So there is what's called designated search areas where, yep, without cause, without any reason at all, they can simply say, "I've."
Is that where it has to be in the paper beforehand?
It may have to be in the, look, they probably would gazette it or put it out in some fashion, but normally it's a trouble spot. It's a spot where, and there, without a warrant or without reasonable grounds, they can simply say they want to search your bag and you have to comply. But normally, if you say, look, I'd rather not, officer, then they should respect that unless the officer has your consent, you're in, or they have reasonable grounds, or you're in that designated search area, then basically, if you say no, that might be the end of it. The police might say they probably won't have a search warrant in their pocket at that stage. But if they have reasonable grounds to say, look, I think you possess illegal drugs, you possess an item that could explode or catch fire, you possess guns, knives, or imitation weapons, or items that can be used for graffiti, or anything in connection with terrorism, and I'm sure there's other specific little grounds that they would have, unless they can give you a reason for believing that you possess any of the above, it would be unlawful for them to conduct a search in the absence of your consent. So,
all right, I'm going to ask you a question now. All right, supposing they do so, or for some reason they take you down the station, they say, we're going to arrest you, they take you down the station, what right have they got to interview? Do they have a divine right that says you must take part in the interview? And I know you, and I'm going to chuck this at you, because you see it on TV where they just sit here and say, no, I'm not going to say anything. What are your rights if they do take you down and want to interview you?
Well, if they arrest you, then you've got more rights than if you voluntarily go to the station and just go and cooperate. Oh, absolutely. So there are certain procedures in place that you need to be. There's certain protection. So it would be better to, not that you ever want to be arrested, but if you're going to, rather than just go down voluntarily, then it's all by consent, and so they can ask and carry on. They can do their job.
Yep.
And you're doing it voluntarily, a bit like, you're volunteering to have something searched. So there are certain rights that kick in if they've arrested you. So sometimes, not that you want to be arrested, but there may be more protection for you. Does that fully answer your question?
But then when you get into the interview room, you can refuse to answer, though, too, can't you?
You can.
It's not very smart.
The trick with that is, if there is a trick, it's best to either say I refuse to give any answers. When people go in and they start answering questions, and when the police get to the stage where they're getting to the cutting edge of what's going on, and then suddenly the person says, oh, now I'm declining to answer any more questions, the implication of guilt is pretty obvious. Okay, so you're happy to talk to us, but you must know or understand something about it. So it's either better to particularly if you've got nothing to hide, to fully cooperate and tell the police and help them as they go on in their in their duties. But if in doubt, and normally you could say, look, you've got me here in relation to what? So if they're charging you, you know what they're there about. If you just go in voluntarily, you may think you're talking to them about the shoplifting you reported somebody else for and find out that it's about what somebody's alleging you've done. So, and look, the police are very smart. They know how to ask questions in such a way that it may not seem to you at the time. It's not a normal conversation like we're having now. It's they are setting out the factors to prove a charge against you, and they know how to phrase their questions, and a conversational approach in that situation can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. Grant, there's a couple of things that I'd like to ask you, or one we'll set up for next time, but very quickly, we hear of these GoFundMe pages where you were talking about New Zealand was what I actually brought up, but it doesn't have to be New Zealand. Someone goes overseas, they haven't got an insurance, the worst thing happens to them and they get killed. Or it could be that someone gets very badly injured and they can't fly home in a normal plane. So they have to have a special plane. So they do a GoFundMe. We'll say it's going to cost $50,000 to get it. But that GoFundMe hits the nerve and they raise $150,000. They spend the $50,000 on what it was going to be. What happens to that $100,000? Can the person legitimately buy a car? Or what happens?
Sure. So I suppose GoFundMe would be comparable to somebody standing on a street corner with a tin saying, I need to raise, you know, $50 to get me to the next town, and people plonk in $150. It's been given as a gift. If it's been given as a gift, then irrespective of them exceeding the limit, you might like to think that people in those situations would pay it forward to somebody else in similar circumstances that would meet the objectives of the original donors of trying to help people in that situation. But I don't believe there's a legal obligation to do so. I think it would be more a moral sense of what they're going to do with that money. And it could be that what they thought was going to cost $50,000 may end up costing $150,000. There's always lots of unexpected expenses around a tragedy.
But the money could be spent on other stuff once they've done what they said they were going to. Because otherwise, if they just raised $150,000, didn't spend it on any of it, then it would be almost be fraud, wouldn't it?
Let's go back to the original. Somebody stands on the street corner and says, I need money. I need money to get me to the next town. But they so fall in love with the local residents who give them lots of money. Possibly because they want them to move on. But they think this is a friendly place. I might stay around. I think a gift is a gift. It can be with a specific purpose. And people might say, well, you're not doing what you said you were going to do. I'd like my money back, and whether or not that person gives the money back. But normally it's a gift. And if they exceed, how do you give it back? Do you give it back pro rata to everybody who's given? Do you just...
Well, it should be, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Or do you say the first people in get to keep it? You get to keep the money from the first people that gave up to the first $50,000, and the rest get it back in total. I don't know. I think there have been times when people have pulled down their GoFundMe page on the basis that they've been exceeded. And sometimes then they might say, look, there are other like causes that you may choose to go to. But you're right, some causes just strike that, hit that nerve, and people are motivated to give.
Right, we've got another question that we'll hold it over until February because it's fairly complicated. Well, I think it's going to be fairly... You might think it's real easy. Right, a couple have been together for about 8 years.
Yep.
They live together. Along the line, they have a child together. Now, when they first got together, the woman didn't have much money, but the guy... His credit rating was so bad, he couldn't borrow $5 from anyone, right? So... the woman pays all the everything. Along the line, they buy a house. Now, they can't put it in his name. He can't get a loan, anything like that. So it's all done by the woman. They get down the stage after 8 years and they break up. So the woman, out of a kindness of a heart, gives someone $30,000, pays him $30,000. Now, he's not on the title. He's never put much into anything, but he has helped along with some of the bills. So she pays him out. Or feels that she should give him some money to help him along the line. So away he goes. He has very little to do with them after that. If she was to die, who would... Now, she hasn't got any parents, because we'll say she's... Well, I think the lady who rang was about 45. Her parents are dead. She's got a brother. And so at what stage... Because they haven't really done a financial settlement. She's just given this $30,000, or given this amount, shouldn't talk about money, this, given a certain amount just to help him along and to get rid of him, basically. So who's her next of kin? If she doesn't leave a will, where would the money go? And if she does leave a will, and say leaves it all to the child, because it's her child, where does that wind up?
Okay. Well, look, that's a great question. And so,
and we're not talking about
you're
cars
talking about
again.
Living together, not married.
No, not married.
Okay.
No.
Right. Yeah. Well, in the remaining moments, if I could say, look, Christmas is one of those times when capacity to stir up past memories, and also as people look forward, a sense of hope for the future. In the midst of all of the reflections and plans, it's obviously. It's important to enjoy the present that people are in, and so
presents or presents.
Well, the present, the present, yeah, being in the current time. So for Christmas, I trust that listeners enjoy the present time that they're in, and that they're able to have a peace filled and blessed Christmas. So from Hutchinson Legal and others, and to you, Alan, and your listeners, it's been a privilege to come in, and thank you for having us.
Well, look, we've enjoyed having you along, and we want you back next year. I know we'd have some fun, particularly when there's two or three of us in here. We can have a good laugh.
As long as it's not Valentine's
Day. As long as you don't come around Valentine's Day. We'll both give that a miss. I'm sure you've got some people there that have probably got better. But no, Grant, look, we really do appreciate all that you've done for us during the 12 months. We've covered a lot of topics. I was trying to think the other night just what topics we've covered, but I know a lot of them seem to be about cars, but they seem to cause a big amount of trouble. And again, over the Christmas period, you can send in to info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. It's info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. Any legal questions? We can't do cases specifically. That one that we've just talked about, while it's a bit specific, we only really want the generalities of it.
Sure.
We'll be back again to do it the new year. So
looking forward to it already, Alan. You do a great job. You and Greg do a great job here.
Thanks, Grant.
See you, mate.
See ya.
Bye.